You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Early on the morning of October 6th, three Dominican nuns entered the U.S. military's Minuteman II missile silo in northern Colorado, calling themselves the Sacred Earth and Space Plowshares II. They wore white outfits bearing the title Disarmament Specialists, and they proceeded to enact the biblical prophecy of hammering swords into plowshares and bringing an end to war. Peace Watch producer Scott Gurian spoke earlier today with Carol Gilbert, Jackie Hudson, and Ardith Plati.
An inmate at the Clear Creek County Detention Center.
This call may be monitored and recorded at any time.
Go ahead.
Well, on October 6th of this past year, 2002, we, at 7:30 in the morning, went to the N-8 missile silo, the Minuteman III missile silo, that's in Weld County. And our motivation for doing this is to stop the crimes, the illegal threatening to use weapons of mass destruction, threatened by George W. Bush on an ongoing basis these days in war making that he calls permanent war making against terrorism, selecting countries like Afghanistan and Iraq and any other he determines without any substantiation in courts of law. And by threatening to do this, you know, defiles the international law, treaties, conventions, protocols that have been implemented and substantiated over the years, and especially the threat of these Minuteman III missiles in the fields of northeast Colorado. So in our study and in our prayer, we decided to open this to the public. So we wore suits that identified ourselves called Citizens Weapons Inspection Team, and also Disarmament Specialists, because this is a challenge to these other nations, and we too in the United States of America better start challenging our own weapons of mass destruction. So we entered into the missile silo. We poured out our own blood as a symbol of the many victims of war making that we have committed over the years and the ones that we threaten at this time, and we pour out our own blood as a symbol that we would rather shed our own blood, give our own blood, rather than ever kill other people in other nations. And then we disarmed symbolically this weapon of mass destruction by using hammers, according to the prophecies of Micah and Isaiah, which says they shall hammer their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against another nation, nor shall they train for war anymore. So this is, we symbolically disarm, transform these weapons of mass destruction into plowshares or useful things for civilians, for the basic human needs of God's people throughout the world. And then we cut down panels of fences to open up these sites to the public, as we're demanding in Iraq. So we did the action of disarming, dismantling, pouring out our own blood, and opening the site to the public as a symbolic disarmament act. We were there at least an hour and 5 minutes before the actual arrest took place, in fact longer than that. And what we did at the end is we went onto the missile silo and we did a liturgy and litany of prayer for the people of Iraq, for the people of Afghanistan, for the people throughout the world who are starving and homeless and have such basic needs. And then of course we were surrounded and arrested and jailed.
Thank you so much. Can I speak to Carol, please?
Hi, Scott. This is Carol.
Can you tell me what the significance of your action is, seen with the backdrop of the looming war with Iraq and this new nuclear threat of North Korea that we're now hearing about?
Scott, we never know what the success of one of these actions is. We act out of a sense of faithfulness. My hope today rests in those who are taking to the streets And I think the message needs to be that whether or not we stop war, what's important is that every person who goes to the streets or who writes a letter can say, no, not in my name. I am not complicit with the United States government. And we're hoping that in some sense our action, which is what we're really asking of Iraq and Korea, to inspect the weapons that are there, and which is what we did and found out that what exists there is illegal, our government should not have these, that the Canadians have also issued a call to their citizens for weapons inspections at Canadian war facilities and have already done one site and are going to do more. So we would hope that our action in October to disarm, symbolically disarm these weapons, to call to the fact that it is illegal what exists there, and the Canadians a call to their citizens that this could awaken people in the United States as a call for citizens' weapons inspections at United States war facilities.
Speak a little bit about the specific location that you went to, the Minuteman III missile silos.
Okay, 2 years ago we had been in Colorado Springs, which at that time was the headquarters for the Space Command. This time we came to the N-8 missile silo in part because that is what President Bush was asking be done around the world, specifically in Iraq. And we felt if it's being asked of those people, then we as citizens also have not only a right but a duty and an obligation to go and see what exists in our own country as U.S. citizens. And there is a connection between N-8, the Minuteman III missile, and what's happening with Star Wars, because those satellites that are being used for Star Wars, it's all connected in looking down, targeting specific sites against our brothers and sisters in Iraq. So it's really all one system. It is to control and exploit and dominate the universe.
Could you talk a little bit about the U.S. Space Command's vision for 2020 and how that factors into the equation?
The vision for 2020, the United States Space Command, is to control, to dominate, and to exploit outer space. Those are their words. Those are not mine. We feel that any nation who has that as a vision really wants to be masters of space, masters of the universe, masters of whatever out there exists. And there is no way in conscience, there is no way morally that we can go along with a government who has that as their vision.
Thank you so much, Carol Gilbert. Can I speak to Jackie Hudson, please?
Yes, I can. Here's Jackie. Thank you, Scott.
Good morning, Scott.
Hi, Jackie. Good to speak to you. We're speaking to you now from the Clear County Jail in Georgetown, Colorado. Could you tell us what you, Carol, and Ardith have been charged with and what your defense will be?
Well, we really have been charged with injury to the national defense of the United States of America, which translates as sabotage, and the other is depredation of property. Each of those, one, the depredation is a 10-year maximum sentence with $250,000 fine, and the sabotage charge is a 20-year maximum with another $250,000 fine. So for the three of us, we're really looking at a life sentence. I am 68 and Ardith is 66 and Carol is 55, so this life sentence is what we are facing.
When is your trial scheduled for, and what can people do to support you and further raise these issues that the three of you spoke about?
Well, what people can do to support, I think, basically is, first of all, prayer that our court system becomes a true justice system and that our judges finally come to abide by the United States Constitution, Article 6, Section 2, which has never been abided by in our courts in any of our cases. So we are hoping that that will happen at this time. Our lawyers, we have an excellent team of lawyers preparing this case. The sabotage charge actually is a bogus charge. And if we are not acquitted on that charge, then something drastically is wrong with our court system.
What would you like people to know about your trial and about why you took this action and about the issues of the impending war with Iraq and possibly with North Korea?
Well, I think what we really are pointing out is we are living in a nation gone mad, and we have leadership that is taking us down a path that will lead to total destruction of the planet, not only of the United States. And if we can alert people in any shape or fashion to what is going on and bring them to an awareness that will bring them to the streets and bring them to demand a change in our policies worldwide, this would be considered something that would be very profitable and very advantageous to this entire world.
Thank you so much, Jackie Hudson. Can I speak to Ardith again quickly, please?
Yes, Kat.
I think we just have a few minutes left. What do you want people to know about your case and about why you acted?
Well, what we want is people to go to the streets. We want people in Washington, D.C. on January 18th. There's a big demonstration called at that time to stop the war in Iraq. We want people to begin to study more deeply and support groups like the Global Network against militarization and weaponization of outer space and out of Florida. And we also want people to support Citizens for Peace in Space in Colorado. I think that anything people can do to show their Congress and the President of the United States with his team of warmongers that we will tolerate war no more, that we will accept only nonviolent negotiation and mediation with the peoples of the world, and that we will start a national strike against the use of oil if that's what it takes to save lives in Iraq and in these other nations. Whatever direction people can take, that's what we want. We do not want people to focus on us personally. We want people to focus only on the issues of the day, which are hunger, malnutrition, need for homes, need for basic human necessities throughout the world, and stopping of this drastic, horrific arms race that the United States continues to perpetuate.
Thank you. And can I speak to Carol one more time, please?
This is Carol.
What are your final thoughts, what you'd like people to...
One more minute for this call.
I guess my final thought, Scott, is that homeland security does not rest in terrorism with other countries. Any child who starves, we are guilty of terrorism. And homeland security is people having just wages, people having jobs, people having education, people having health care. And all of these things are lacking in the United States today.
Carol Gilbert, Ardith Platy, and Jackson Hudson, nuns. Speaking with Peace Watch producer Scott Gurian from the Clear Creek County Jail in Georgetown, Colorado.
The president, he's got his war. Folks don't know just what it's for. Nobody gives us a rhyme or reason. Have one doubt, they call it treason. We're chicken feathers all the way out one nut. God damn it, trying to make it real compared to what? Suck it to me. Sunday sleep and nod, trying to duck the wrath of God. Preachers filling us with fright. They all trying to teach us what they think is right. They really got to be some kind of nut. I can't use it. I'm trying to make it real compared to what.
compared to what? Les McCann and Eddie Harris. Allegations of U.S. military personnel torturing suspects captured abroad in the war on terror have abounded in the last year. Those charges were investigated in a detailed Washington Post article, which quoted several unnamed CIA and Pentagon sources, admitting that the Central Intelligence Agency routinely commits acts defined as torture under international law on prisoners at the Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. Treatment includes forcing men to stand or kneel in painful positions for hours and depriving them of sleep, then bombarding them with lights and noise for up to 24 hours. Often captives are beaten by military police and Army Special Forces troops, blindfolded, and thrown into walls. When more extreme measures are needed to convince a subject to talk, U.S. forces frequently turn over captives to foreign intelligence services, whose practice of torture have been documented by the State Department itself. KPFK's Jerry Quickly asked Jim Ross, senior legal analyst from Human Rights Watch, to explain how the charges outlined in the Washington Post article are a violation of international law.
We were obviously deeply concerned by the rather detailed article by the Washington Post. And there were sort of really three situations that present itself. One was direct torture by U.S. officials at Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan. And there was also some suggestion that this was also going on in Diego Garcia under U.S. control. Also cases of rendition that you notice where people are sent back to other countries, and actually a third case is described as well, where people who are captured in other countries, the U.S. is present or is aware of torture taking place of these al-Qaeda, suspected al-Qaeda detainees in these places and is aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a basic situation. This raises concerns about the use of torture, and of course torture is one of the most fundamental prohibitions under international law, both a matter of customary international law, but also treaties that the U.S. is a party to, such as the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, and most relevant, the Convention Against Torture.
Mm-hmm.
And this, of course, these treaties not only prohibit torture, but they do other things as well. They prohibit, for example, a country from sending someone back to a place where they are likely to be tortured, and they also prohibit the involvement of officials in the torture, even if they're not directly involved in committing the torture themselves. From our perspective, we believe the Washington Post article puts the U.S. government on notice. You know, that you have been told that there are allegations of torture, and you know, first we'd like to see the Bush administration make it clear that the use of torture is not U.S. policy. And that they seriously investigate these allegations. And thirdly, you know, to take steps to prosecute any and all officials who might be responsible for such activity.
Well, it seems that the U.S. has a very, at best, a checkered past in terms of governments that actually that torture folks. Anyone who's down for U.S. foreign policy, it doesn't really seem to matter much whether or not they're torturing people, whether you're talking about Sukarno or whether you're talking about the Phoenix program in Vietnam or whether you're talking about any one of a number of corrupt governments we've backed in Central and South America. As long as it seems to be the requirement is that the despots need to support U.S. foreign policy and then our government looks the other way or we actively support them.
Sure. I mean, you know, prosecuting governments and officials who have been responsible for torture in other countries in the United States has always been difficult. There's certainly been important developments in recent years to try to address that problem, the most important of which, of course, is the International Criminal Court, which is now now international law accepted by 60 or 70 countries.
Except for the exemption
and
given to the U.S.
Now, and of course, and the court is beginning to get its act together. The countries who have ratified the treaty are in the process of picking the judges. But this process, the United States not only has not signed the treaty. I mean, originally it was signed by President Clinton. The Bush administration unsigned the treaty and is now actively working to make this International Criminal Court ineffective. And that of course, is certainly a real problem, because the International Criminal Court won't solve the human rights problems of the world, but it does provide a venue for prosecuting dictators and others who have committed serious violations of human rights.
Mm-hmm. Now, well, the Washington Post article basically states that there are U.S. Army personnel, as well as CIA personnel, U.S. intelligence services, that will often turn over prisoners who they cannot get to reveal information to the foreign intelligence services of countries such as Egypt, Morocco, Jordan, Syria. And there's also questions about our base in Diego Garcia. How culpable is the U.S. for a treatment that folks receive after they turn them over to countries that are known to participate in torture?
One point of our letter was to make it clear to the U.S. government that if you turn someone over to a place where they're likely to be tortured, where you have reason to believe they will be tortured, you are violating international law. And this kind of violation involving torture is a crime of what's known, the technical term is universal jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. And that means, in theory at least, any competent court in the world can try the case. I mean, torture is considered such a bad thing that it's not just a problem in the place where it took place, but in other parts of the world as well. So it could be an international criminal court, but it could be a regular court in another country that tries cases of universal jurisdiction. At the moment, that doesn't happen very often in Belgium these days. Because of the laws there, it's likely to happen. But we are putting U.S. officials on notice to say, look, it's your responsibility to look into these allegations of torture, to stop it if it's taking place, to prosecute those who are doing it, or turning people over to foreign countries. And if you don't, in the future, you may be the one on trial.
And not only might they be the ones on trial, it seems very counterproductive, because they also put other citizens of the world at risk, citizens of other countries, as well as citizens of the United States.
And citizens of the United States. We raise our concerns of international law with the U.S. government and the like. But it's not just enough to raise the dry legal analysis. We try to make it clear that these things affect U.S. citizens abroad, U.S. soldiers. When the United States doesn't abide by the Geneva Conventions in its treatment of people at Guantanamo Bay, this puts U.S. soldiers who are fighting, whether it's this war or future wars, at risk when they get captured and held by other countries.
Well, Stephanie, why would any of the weaker countries that we are up against, why would they be obliged to file the Geneva Convention when someone as wealthy, well-equipped, and overpowering as the United States doesn't bother to follow it?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And the history of it is, and of course, the U.S. has violated the Geneva Conventions in the past in various contexts. But the United States, and I should say the United States military, has actually over the years been a leading proponent of the Geneva Conventions and adherence to it. During the Korean War, for instance, North Korea and China were not party at the time to the Geneva Conventions. Nevertheless, captured North Koreans and Chinese held by the United States were given prisoner of war status.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because the United States recognized that, look, it was in the U.S.'s best interest that countries abided by international law.
Right.
Whatever the legalities and the moralities and the like, it protected U.S. soldiers.
Right. One of the stunning quotes in the Washington Post article was from a U.S. official who said, quote unquote, "If you don't violate someone's human rights some of the time, you probably aren't doing your job. I don't think we want to be promoting a view of zero tolerance on this," referring to torture. "That was the whole problem for a long time with the CIA." It basically seems to be very clearly admitting that, that it's okay, it's normal, it's part of our business procedures that we should be involved in here at the CIA. And for too long, we didn't have access to be able to torture these people, and now it seems the Bush administration has unleashed these men.
It's a pretty incredible quote. I mean, one of the points we make, I mean, the Geneva Conventions were drafted by government, so it's not some document that, left-wing activist groups concocted. It was by governments. And the protections aren't always as full as they should be.
And but it's a baseline. It's a starting point.
It's a starting point, exactly. But it's a starting point that should be met. But, if for example, you know, prisoners of war, sometimes you see assertions by officials suggesting that prisoners of war can't be interrogated. And under the Geneva Conventions, they can be. You know, the CIA, well, they of course can't use torture, but there are other means in which you can, without harming someone either mentally or physically, you know, encourage them and get them to give information that you need. My sense is they're probably pretty sophisticated about doing that. So an assertion, you know, by this official here that, you know, you have to use torture to do your job properly, that's pretty incredible and pretty unprofessional.
KPFK's Jerry Quickly speaking with Jim Ross, a senior legal analyst from the Human Rights Watch. Thanks to Dan Pavlish for that report. Finally tonight, Secretary of State Colin Powell has sometimes been called the moderate among the hawks in the Bush administration, but his dovish qualities were not apparent in this speech he delivered during the 2000 Republican convention.
We defeated communism, we defeated fascism, we defeated them on the field of battle, and we defeated them on the field of ideas. The sick nations that still pursue the fool's gold of tyranny and weapons of mass destruction will soon find themselves left behind in the dustbin of history. They are investing in their own demise as surely as the Soviet Union did by investing in the Red Army. They are of the past, and we are of the future. Today, we are the most powerful nation on earth, militarily, economically, by any measure. We are that rarity in history, a trusted nation whose power is tempered by compassion, whose leadership is earned by example, and whose foreign affairs will be guided by common interest and common sense. The world is watching to see if all this power and wealth is just for the well-to-do, the comfortable, the privileged. Or are we a nation that can make our dream real for all Americans? He will not repeat the mistakes of the past and let our insurance policy, our armed forces, fall into disrepair.
That montage of Secretary of State Colin Powell was prepared by Peace Watch producer Scott Gurian. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Keith Shalajan, Benta Berklin, Mike Korsch, and Reem Kahuta. Thanks to Pete Karakis, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producers Larry Binsky and Sam Husseini. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting the website at PacificaArchives.org or by calling 1-800-735-0230. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback to peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.